Jayam Vishnupad Paramhansa Paripraja Astotra Satasri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sekaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Jamuna Mai Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Premo. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. I am very happy to be here today in this most divine abode of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and Srila Prabhupada and His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj and all of their devotees and friends. Today I will read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service, Text 23. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, text 23. I'll just recite the Sanskrit twice and then we'll recite the individual word meanings responsively. Jivancha vo bhagavatam grirenum na ja. Oh. All right, well, I'll just do one line, and if you can repeat it, very good. Jivan chavo bhagavatam grirenum. Na jatu martyo bilabheta yastu. Shri Vishnu Padya Manujastu Lasya.
Shri Vishnu Padya Manujastu Lasya.
Svasanchavoyastu Naveda Gandham. Jivanchavo Bhagavatam Grirenum.
Jivanchavo Bhagavatam Grirenum.
na jatu martyo bilabheta yastu. Shri Vishnu Padya Manujastu Lasya.
Shri Vishnu Padya Manujastu Lasya.
Svasanchavo yastu na Veda Gandam. Jivan. While living. Shava, a dead body. Bhagavata Angri Renum, the dust of the feet of a pure devotee. Na, never. Jatu, at any time. Martya, mortal. Abhilabheta, particularly received. Ya, a person. To, but. Shri, with opulence. Vishnu Padya, of the lotus feet of Vishnu. Manuja, a descendant of Manu. A man. Tulasya, leaves of the tulsi tree. Svasan, while breathing. Shava, still a dead body. Ya, who? To, but. Naveda, never experienced. Gandam, the aroma. Translation. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the breathing dead body is a ghost. When a man dies, he is called dead. But when he again appears in a subtle form, not visible to our present vision, and yet acts, such a dead body is called a ghost. Ghosts are always very bad elements, always creating a fearful situation for others. Similarly, the ghost-like non-devotees who have no respect for the pure devotees nor for the Vishnu deity in the temple create a fearful situation for the devotees at all times. The Lord never accepts any offering from such impure ghosts. There's more to the purport, but I'll pause now to discuss the topic of the breathing dead man. Just to give the primary understanding on the basis of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has two energies, well, more than two, but for our discussion, two energies. The superior energy, Paraprakriti, or the spiritual energy, and the material energy, Aparaprakriti, or inferior energy. And within the category of the material energy, there are eight divisions: earth, water, fire, air, ether or space, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So the first five are considered gross material elements, and the other three are subtle material elements. And above all of them is the Atma, or the soul. Now, when the Atma leaves the body, he leaves behind the gross body, earth, water, air, or in modern language, solids, liquids, and gases. But the subtle body, which is made of mind, intelligence, and false ego, remains with the soul. And in fact, that subtle body carries the soul to its next gross body. And one's body is determined by one's activities during his life, and one's thoughts at the time of death. And the Lord is so kind that generally he fulfills the desires of the living entity by awarding them an appropriate body. For example, if someone wants to eat voraciously anything without discrimination and lives his life in that way, so in his next life he can get the body of a pig. And in that body he can eat as much as he can hold, without any discrimination as to what is suitable or not suitable. Now, how does one become a ghost? Because this is a very unusual situation. So, one of the most common ways that one can become a ghost is if he commits suicide. Because someone who commits suicide, in effect, is saying, I don't want a body. You know, I don't want to continue living in a body. But the difficulty is that generally people commit suicide because their material desires are frustrated. They're like so disappointed in life that they just want to end their life. So they end up having a subtle body, but they have gross material desires. But because they're in a subtle body, they're unable to fulfill their desires. So, therefore, ghosts often try to get possession of someone else's gross body so they can fulfill their gross material desires through that other person's body. And so they create a very fearful situation. Another way a person can take birth as a ghost is if he's very attached, because generally what one is most attached to is what one will think of at the time of death. And accordingly, one will get a body. Now, it might happen that a person is very attached to his house, especially if it's like a palace or a castle. So if he dies thinking of his castle, he may take birth as a ghost in that very castle. And often we hear of stories of big palaces and castles that are haunted by ghosts because their previous owners were so attached that they didn't want to leave. They thought of their castle at the time of death. And it so happened in the history of ISKCON that devotees found very good properties that were for sale at a very low price because they were haunted. And the devotees asked Srila Prabhupada, you know, what they should do. And Srila Prabhupada said that you should get the property and then do Harinam Sankirtan, chant the holy names, and the kirtan will rid the haunted house of the ghosts. So we got some good properties for very less price. Now, this idea of a ghost can actually have some relationship to us, unfortunately. Oh, fortunately or unfortunately. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami has composed a very beautiful verse, Bhukti Mukti Spriha Yavat, begins that the desires for bhukti, that means material enjoyment, and mukti, impersonal liberation, merging and becoming one with the impersonal effulgence from the transcendental form of Krishna, are like ghosts that haunt the conditioned soul. And they may even to some extent haunt a devotee, immature devotee. And how is it that they are compared to ghosts? Well, if a ghost gains possession of our body or mind, even for a moment, we think things that aren't really us. Actually, many people have this experience that some thought, maybe a terrible thought, will enter our mind that really doesn't seem like us, our real self. And some devotees mentioned that phenomenon to Srila Prabhupada, and he said it could be that a ghost, like, temporarily will enter your mind. So these desires for bhukti and mukti, which are so common, I mean, practically everyone in the material world, other than devotees, is filled with these desires for bhukti and mukti, either material enjoyment or impersonal liberation. But they're not really us. As jivatmas, our real nature is to serve Krishna. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, jiver swarupai Krishna nityadas, that the constitutional position of the living entity is he's the eternal servant of Krishna. So these desires for bhukti and mukti are actually foreign to us. And so it's like being haunted by a ghost. Some years ago, and I'm not... Anyway, I already began, so I guess I have to finish. But I'm not suggesting that anyone take any action on what I'm going to mention. But about probably 30 years ago, there was a movie called Ghost. And the talk amongst, you know, the devotees I was friendly with was that the writer of the story must have read Srila Prabhupada's books because it's so accurately presented the philosophy. And they were, you know, they were saying, oh, you should see it. But I wasn't that type to, like, watch movies. But it did come on an in-flight. And frankly, I couldn't resist. So there is one scene, just to give an example, there is one scene where the ghost was on the railway platform, and there was a vending machine selling cigarettes. And, you know, from his previous life, he wanted a cigarette, but he didn't have a physical body with which to enjoy it. So, like in the movie, he's like in a subtle body, like he's just so angry and frustrated, he's just like banging against the vending machine trying to get the cigarettes. So it's just to let you know that it's not a good body to have. It's it can be very frustrating. But when we, even devotees, aspiring devotees, are possessed by these external artificial desires for material enjoyment and impersonal liberation, we can also be frustrated because those types of desires can never be fulfilled. And in any case, they can never satisfy the soul because they're foreign to the soul. So now, that's sort of like the negative. So now what is the positive? So I continue the purport. I'll read the verse again, just so that you can more easily understand the connection between the purport and the verse. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulsi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. So I continue. There is a common saying that one should first love the dog of the beloved before one shows any loving sentiments for the beloved. They're saying, love me, love my dog. The stage of pure devotion is attained by sincerely serving a pure devotee of the Lord. The first condition of devotional service to the Lord is therefore to be a servant of a pure devotee. And this condition is fulfilled by the statement, quote, reception of the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee who has also served another pure devotee, end quote. That is the way of pure disciplic succession, or parampara. So Srila Rupa Goswami has enunciated the complete science of Bhakti Yoga in his book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And the very first items of Bhakti Yoga are the very first, Ado Guru Padashraya, that one should take shelter of the lotus feet of the guru. But who is a guru? No one can be a guru unless he has similarly taken shelter of the lotus feet of his guru, who in turn has taken shelter of the lotus feet of his guru. And that chain goes all the way back to the Godhead himself, to Krishna, who is the original guru. So this is the way that we can engage in devotional service, begin the process of bhakti yoga, and ultimately become free from all these extraneous conceptions and desires, and actually achieve the happiness that we all want. And this love me, love my dog, the dog, in this example, is like the pure devotee, and the person is Krishna, is God. So before we can approach Krishna, before we can approach the Lord, we first approach the Lord's puppy, and we pat the puppy and feed the puppy and make the puppy happy, and then the master becomes pleased seeing that his puppy has been pleased. Maharaj Rahugana. Now he was a king some centuries ago. Maharaj Rahugana inquired from the great saint Judd Bharat as to how he had attained such a liberated stage of a Paramahansa. And in answer, the great saint replied as follows. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.12. Rahuganai tat tapasanayati na chejyaya nirvapanad grahadva na chandasa naiva jalagni suryair vina mahat padarajo bishekam. O King Rahugana, the perfectional stage of devotional service, or the Paramahansa stage of life, cannot be attained unless one is blessed by the dust of the feet of great devotees. It is never attained by tapasya, austerity, the Vedic worshipping process, acceptance of the renounced order of life, the discharge of the duties of household life, the chanting of the Vedic hymns, or the performance of penances in the hot sun, within cold water, or before the blazing fire. So we can do so many things for our spiritual elevation, and a number of them have been listed here. And if one travels to the Himalayas or attends some great gathering of saintly persons such as Kumbh Mela, one will see people who have dedicated themselves to engaging in these different types of penance and austerity and duties. But here, the great sage Jad Bharat says that one cannot achieve the ultimate spiritual perfection by these means. One can achieve the highest stage of spiritual life only by serving the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee. Now, what does it actually mean to serve the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee? In general, it means to follow his instructions. It can also, if one is fortunate enough, it can also mean to actually serve his lotus feet. But it can mean to serve the devotees who have taken shelter of his lotus feet. And so being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant will please the devotee, the spiritual master, and that in turn will please Krishna. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado by the mercy of the spiritual master, one gets the mercy of Krishna. Now, in the context of the lives of many of us, the pure devotee that we were able to serve was Srila Prabhupada. And before meeting him, we were in that ghost-like condition of, you know, wanting to get that cigarette or whatever, or in frustration, wanting to just merge and obliterate everything and just become one with God. Become God. But by the grace of his lotus feet, we were delivered from our ghost-like existence. And then that has continued through parampara, meeting those meeting others who took shelter of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, or others who've taken shelter of the lotus feet of someone who's taken shelter of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. But it's not limited, but as far as the world goes, Srila Prabhupada is definitely the main figure whose lotus feet dust has given people the opportunity to realize their real life in Krishna consciousness. Continue the purport. In other words, Lord Sri Krishna is the property of his pure, unconditional devotees. And as such, only the devotee can deliver Krishna to another devotee. Krishna is never obtainable directly. Now, at this stage, I'll tell a story that illustrates this point. In fact, it was an arrangement of Srila Prabhupada's to illustrate this point. But I was the first disciple of Srila Prabhupada's to go to Madras. And in Madras, I developed a relationship with the Chief Justice of the High Court. And he wanted to become a devotee. He was becoming a devotee. He wanted to become a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And when Srila Prabhupada came to Madras, the Chief Justice arranged a program for him in a large open field, and high court judges and high court advocates and many distinguished people came. And then afterwards, the Chief Justice invited Srila Prabhupada and his disciples to his home. And at his home, he gifted Srila Prabhupada a little silver figurine of Lord Krishna and other things, a sandalwood garland and different gifts. And so Prabhupada was sitting on his chair and all the devotees were sitting on the floor. And in that party were what was a little child named Saraswati, the daughter of Shamsundar Prabhu and Malati Mataji. And Srila Prabhupada held that little silver Krishna right in front of Saraswati, like she was just standing right in front of him. And she said, "Who is this?" She said, "Krishna." So then he slowly moved the little deity from her side and hid him behind his back and said, "Saraswati, where is Krishna?" And she looked like he's gone. So like she was looking everywhere, like looking in the room, looking at the faces of the different devotees. And she was in that, in her own childlike way, in that mood of transcendental eagerness to find Krishna, feeling separation from Krishna. But being, you know, just a few years old, she maybe got a little bit distracted. And again, Prabhupada said, "Saraswati, where is Krishna?" And again, she became like eager, "Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna?" Looking, looking, looking. And then finally, her mother, Malati, gave her a hint and said, Saraswati, who has Krishna? And immediately, Saraswati's face lit up and her eyes opened, and she said, Prabhupada has Krishna. And she came like running up to Srila Prabhupada, and then Srila Prabhupada brought the little Krishna out from behind him and showed him to Saraswati. So when I read this, Lord Sri Krishna is the property of his pure, unconditional devotees. And as such, only the devotees can deliver Krishna to another devotee. I think of that incident. But we have to have that eagerness, that anxiety. Krishna is never obtainable directly. Lord Chaitanya therefore designated himself as Gopi Bhartu Padakamalayor Dasa Das Anudasa, or the most obedient servant of the servants of the Lord, who maintains the Gopi damsels at Vrindavan. A pure devotee therefore never approaches the Lord directly, but tries to please the servant of the Lord's servants, and thus the Lord becomes pleased. And only then can the devotee relish the taste of the tulsi leaves stuck to his lotus feet. So the tulsi plant, tulsi is herself a great devotee of Krishna. And the Lord is served by offering tulsi leaves at his lotus feet. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is never to be found by becoming a great scholar of the Vedic literatures, but he is very easily approachable through his pure devotee. Vedeshu Durlaba Adurlaba Atma Bhakta. In Vrindavan, all the pure devotees pray for the mercy of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. So on our altar here, just to Krishna's left is Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is a tender-hearted feminine counterpart of the Supreme Whole, resembling the perfectional stage of the worldly feminine nature. So sometimes people, they really don't know who God is. I mean, generally, they don't know who God is. And sometimes they imagine that because he's the oldest of all, he must have a long beard. There are often pictures of him with like a, sitting on a throne with a long beard and a crown. But according to Vedic literatures such as Srimad Bhagavatam and Brahma Samhita, he is eternally youthful. Although he's the oldest of the old, Purusha Purana, Navayovanam Cha, but he also always has the form of a fresh youth. And He is always associated with his pleasure-giving potency, Padini Shakti, his eternal consort, Srimati Radharani. And this is the, you could say, complete conception of Godhead, both male and female. But just as in the material world, and this is not to indulge in stereotypes, but there are differences of nature between males and females. And that is true because in the original, in the spiritual world, there's also that difference. And it is said that because Krishna is the Supreme Lord, it is difficult to approach him. But Srimati Radharani represents the compassionate side of Krishna. Krishna is compassionate, but his compassion is especially, you could say, embodied in Srimati Radharani. And so we can approach Krishna by appealing to his compassionate side as Srimati Radharani. And Srimati Radharani's vision is such that she thinks that everyone is a better devotee than she is. This is Mahabhagavata. She thinks that everyone is a better devotee than she is. And so if someone comes forward to serve Krishna through parampara, through the proper channel, Srimati Radharani will think, oh, that devotee is so nice, that devotee is nicer than I am. And she can recommend that devotee to Krishna. And if Radharani recommends a devotee to Krishna, then Krishna is bound to accept that devotee. I mean, this is, I know we have like quite a diverse audience here, but in Radharani's place in Vraj, Varshana, there is a saying that whatever Radha does, Krishna likes. And whatever Radha likes, Krishna does. So the idea is if Srimati Radharani recommends a devotee to Krishna, then Krishna will not refuse. But the devotee also does not want to surpass Radharani to serve Krishna. Like as Srila Prabhupada says, that the devotee will place a flower in the hand of Srimati Radharani to offer to Krishna. And receiving the flower offered by Srimati Radharani, Krishna will be exceedingly pleased to accept the offering. Therefore, the mercy of Radharani is available very readily to the sincere devotees. And once she recommends a devotee to Lord Krishna, the Lord at once accepts the devotee's admittance into his association. The conclusion is, therefore, that one should be more serious about seeking the mercy of the devotee than that of the Lord directly. And by one's doing so, by the goodwill of the devotee, the natural attraction for the service of the Lord will be revived. So, yes, that is the mercy of the devotee, that one's attraction for the service of the Lord is revived. One actually has to have that attraction to do service. Otherwise, we may talk about going back home, back to Godhead. But without the desire to serve, it's really a desire for liberation. But what we really want is that desire to serve. And that is awakened, by the mercy, by the goodwill of the devotee. So somehow or other, everyone here is connected with devotees. Otherwise, you couldn't be here. You couldn't be here without being connected with devotees. And by that connection, one can be dragged, I would say. One can be dragged, even if one is a little unwilling, dragged to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. So this is our process, to just submit ourselves to the devotees, to be trained by them, to be guided by them, to be engaged in service by them, and to adopt the processes of chanting and hearing about Krishna with them, and remember Krishna with them. And it's all very congenial and palatable. These other processes can be very difficult. But as living beings, we want association. We don't want to be alone. But in other processes, out of fear of being entangled in material relationships, material activities, they go off to the Himalayas, to the mountains, to the jungles, the caves, to avoid association that could entangle them in material activities. But with us, it's the opposite. In the right association, our spiritual progress is accelerated. So, I congratulate you all for being here, for having received the dust of the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada, directly or indirectly. And I also come here for that association, and especially that of His Holiness Radhanath Swami, but of all of you. And I also look forward to progressing back home, back to Godhead with all of you. Hare Krishna. You want to...